this week we're still in the Gospels. And basically I'm going to be covering the last week of Jesus' life before his crucifixion. So when I say the last week of his life, that's what I'm referring to, because not to have a spoiler alert here, but he is resurrected from the dead, and he spent some more time with us. So I know, spoiler alert. So we're going to be talking about his last week. But before we do that, I just want to take some time to talk to you about the Gospels. There are four different books of the Bible that are what we call the Gospels: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the first four books of the New Testament. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called the Synoptic Gospels. And John sort of stands on his own. And the word synoptic in Greek means seeing or viewing together. And I think the point of that is that Matthew, Mark, and Luke are all very similar. Okay, and so I just want to take a little bit of time here. Hi, Pastor. We're going to take a little bit of time here just to look at some of the similarities and the differences between the Synoptic Gospels and the Gospel of John. And we're going to look at five different things. Okay, we're going to look at timing, style, purpose, content, and how they portray Jesus. But before I do that, I want to put you in the mindset of one of these first century writers. Okay? One of the first century writers of the Gospels. I want you to think about what Scripture was to them. What was Scripture? Old Testament. The law, the prophets, okay? The wisdom literature. The Old Testament was what was Scripture to them. And, you know, I just have to think that not one of them, when they were writing, ever considered in their wildest imagination that what they were writing would eventually become part of the canon of Scripture. I don't think they were writing going, oh yeah, I'm writing Scripture here. This is good stuff. Okay? I think, and we're going to talk about, you know, what their purposes were, but it ended up as Scripture. I don't believe that they were thinking that that's what this was going to be, okay? So, with that in mind, let's just talk a little bit about the differences and all that. So, for the Synoptic Gospels, we're going to go through all those first. The timing of those were written first. Those were written earlier, I should say. They weren't the first books of the New Testament that were written, but they were written earlier. If we take the approximate date that Jesus was crucified and resurrected, is 33 AD, you know, the book of Mark was probably the earliest gospel, and that was written in 55 AD, which was like 20 years later. You know, they estimate that Matthew and Luke were written in the late 50s or the early 60s. So that's a lot of time that passed after the events of Jesus' life. A lot of time. Basically 20, 30 years, that's a generation, okay? So a whole generation had kind of entered the scene after the death and resurrection of Jesus. So the style of the Synoptic Gospels is very fact-filled. It's very event-driven. And there was an urgency with the writers of the Synoptic Gospels because they realized that all of the eyewitnesses to things that had happened with Jesus, the eyewitnesses were dying. They were getting old, and they were not going to be around anymore. And so there became this urgency. We have to write this down. We have to record this. We need to know, you know, all of these things that Jesus said and did. So there was sort of this pressure on them a little bit to get this accomplished, to write this stuff down and have it recorded before all of the eyewitnesses to Jesus' life were gone. Okay? Plus, they were introducing a whole new generation to who this Jesus Christ person was. All right? There were 20 years, 30 years of people born, coming to faith, who didn't know anything about Jesus. So as far as content, the synoptic gospels, and hence the word synoptic, all cover sort of the same thing. They cover much of the same subject matter and in much of the same way. They all talk about Jesus' temptation, his transfiguration, the Sermon on the Mount, parables, the Lord's Prayer, and the establishment of the Lord's Supper. So all of those things are covered in the synoptics. And then Luke has a whole bunch of other stories that kind of stand alone. The purpose, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, of the Synoptic Gospels was very similar, and it was to publish the life of Jesus, to get it down on paper with facts and with events. All the Gospel writers handled Jesus, the person of Jesus, a little bit differently. Matthew was written to the Jews, whereas Mark and Luke were written to Gentiles or non-Jews. And Matthew wrote to the Jews outlining for them, who knew the Old Testament scriptures and knew the Old Testament prophecies, pointing for them to how Jesus fulfilled all that. Mark, who wrote to the Gentiles in Rome, introduces Jesus as the Son of God to a completely new generation. And I just think how exciting that was. Luke wrote to Gentile Greeks, and Luke really presents Jesus as a friend of sinners and outcasts. And if you look at some of the stories that Luke presents, it's the leper, it's the prostitute, it's the down and out, the person that no one else wanted to associate with. So Luke kind of presents Jesus as this friend to the one that no one else wants to be friends with. So let's jump over to the next column, the Gospel of John. John, who was a disciple, I should say too, that of the synoptic of the Gospels, Matthew and John were the only two that were disciples or apostles. So John, the Apostle John, who was in kind of considered one of the inner circle, the big three. He wrote the Gospel of John, and he wrote it much later, probably around 90 AD. Okay, so think about that. That's a good, 50, 55 years after the death and resurrection of Christ. A long time. And that's a full generation after the Synoptic Gospels were written. By this time, when John wrote his Gospel, the stories of Jesus were very familiar. The person of Jesus was pretty familiar because the Gospels had circulated. So because of that, I think, John didn't include a lot of the stuff that everybody already knew. Everybody already knew the stories of Jesus in the wilderness. And you know what I'm saying? Like, why cover the familiar when it's already been done? John also had the perspective of 50 years. 50 years of thinking and pondering about the years that he walked with Christ and the things that he saw happen. And so, that kind of takes us into the next thing. The style of the book of John is much more emotional, much more reflective. It's much less event-driven and a lot more theological because John was... And when you read it, I mean, his style is just so different. It's much more, giving insight into, well, Jesus did this, and he said this, but this is why he did it, because he knew what they were thinking. He knew what was in their hearts. Having the perspective of 50 years, he was able to, interpret and understand a lot more of what happened and then explain it to us in his gospel. So as far as content, again, John didn't include a lot of the things that the other Gospels did, but he included a lot of things that they didn't. For example, Jesus' early ministry in Galilee, Jesus' very first miracle, where he turned the water into wine at the wedding. John's Gospel is the only one that records that. John records that Jesus made two trips to Jerusalem before his crucifixion, and that's the only place it talks about it, the woman at the well. What a great story. The raising of Lazarus from the dead. John's the only one that tells us about it. Jesus' goodbye speech to his apostles. And Jesus' high priestly prayer, John is the only one that talks about those things. And that's just some great, that's some great reading right there. Especially, you know, John, like 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, where it's kind of Jesus' final, they're in the upper room and he's talking, and it's Jesus who knows his time has come. And everything that you would want to say to the people that you love most, all those things that are most important to you, sharing them, and that's what's in those chapters. So John's purpose was much more theological. Again, he wrote this in 85-90 AD, which was well after Jerusalem was conquered, well after the fall of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple, which happened in 70 AD. So his purpose in writing, he wrote to the Jews who were very discouraged and disillusioned because their temple had been destroyed. And, you know, they've been conquered and all of this. And the temple's gone, and the temple was so important. So John writes to them to help them see, Jesus is the one. He's the one we were waiting for. John also writes to Christians who were being severely persecuted at this time by both Jews and the Romans. And John also writes to counter false teachings that had risen up. Keep in mind, now, this is 50 years after the death and resurrection of Christ, and Christianity had spread, but with it also had spread some false teaching and you know, some Gnosticism and some false teachers and all that. So John writes to help clear up some of that. In John 20, verses 30 and 31, John himself tells us what his purpose in writing is. And it also kind of gives us a picture about how he portrays Jesus. So in John 20, 30 and 31, he says this, Jesus performed many signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. That, by the way, is the key verse of the book of John. But that's why he wrote it. So that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you might have life in his name. So John's gospel is all about the person of Jesus, explaining his nature, that he's God and that he's man, and his purpose in the world, and basically just showing us how Jesus is the Messiah. Okay? So one of the other verses that John ends his book with says, this is John 20, 25, Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written. Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about the fact that what we have in the Gospels is a sliver of what Jesus said and what he did? What do you think about that? Discussion time. How does that resonate with you?
I would hate to be the one that had to decide what sliver to let people have.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, think about this. Jesus lived for roughly 33 years. From the time he was born, roughly, we hear a little bit when he was 12. There's his birth, then nothing for 12 years, and then we hear that he got left behind in the temple. And then nothing after that until his ministry. Think about all of those years of Jesus' life that are just a mystery. So, anyway. All right. Well, we're going to move on to the next section, unless there are any questions, comments, or points of rebuttal. Okay. So we're going to be looking mainly at the events of Jesus' last week. And his week, his last week, starts in Bethany. So I want you to take a few minutes at your tables, and it's on the page 2 of your handouts. I want you to read these verses in John at your table and then discuss these questions, okay? I would love it if you would read these verses out loud to each other, okay? So give us about 5 minutes and go. All right, let's point some of your discussion for the whole room to hear, okay? So, who lived in Bethany?
Lazarus.
Mary, Martha, and Lazarus lived in Bethany. Who else lived in Bethany?
Many Jews.
Many Jews, yes. What happened in Bethany?
Lazarus was raised from the dead after 4 days.
Lazarus was raised from the dead after he was for sure dead. There was zero question about whether he was dead or not. He was for sure dead. So how far is Bethany from Jerusalem?
Less than
2 miles. So very close. What was the political climate for Jesus as he arrived in Bethany?
Tea party?
Not that kind of political climate. And what I mean by that is, what was the mood? What was the feeling? What was happening?
There were a lot of people who were very excited because they came to believe in who Jesus was based on what had happened to Lazarus.
Okay.
But there was also a crowd that was very eager to kind of sweep everything under the rug.
Right. What do you mean by sweep everything under the rug?
Kill Jesus, basically, because they were concerned that they were going to lose their power, that Rome was going to come in and kind of shake up everything that the Jewish leaders had established.
Right.
If news got out.
Right. So what other interesting information was in there about who else did they want to kill?
Lazarus. The Walking Dead.
The religious leaders. They already had Jesus in their crosshairs, but now people just will not shut up about Lazarus. They keep talking about it, so now Lazarus has to die too. So we could, like, it would shut everyone up anyway. I don't know. So this is the stage that's been set for Jesus last week. This is sort of the climate in which he's coming into. Lazarus' resurrection from the dead had inflamed what was already a pretty intense situation for Jesus. He intentionally stayed away from Jerusalem and ministered more out with the people in Galilee and everything, because Jerusalem was a hotbed. The religious leaders were there, and man, he just really threatened them. So when he was there, it was just intense and you know, challenging and asking questions, and they're feeling threatened and they're trying to trick Jesus, and so that was already happening. And then he raised Lazarus from the dead and it made that situation even worse. So this is the scene, and it's Passover week when everybody is coming to Jerusalem. Okay, everybody. So imagine, you know, all roads heading into Jerusalem are just clogged with people, travelers, animals, kids, and there's buzz in the air because they've heard about Lazarus, they're wondering if Jesus is going to be there, and they're wondering, is Jesus going to declare himself the Messiah? So lots of excitement and lots of tension. I sort of think about Jesus coming into Jerusalem at this time, and probably because I know what the end of the story is, I kind of think of this as a showdown. Jesus versus the religious leaders. And that's kind of what happens during the week. But I'll say that for a second. I don't want to spoil the surprise. So that is sort of just the climate of what's happening as Passover week starts.